Hello, everyone. This is Dave Berta, news editor at Foresight Health. Welcome to Foresight Health's How Healthcare Revolutionaries Think podcast, where we get inside the heads of people trying to fix the healthcare system. Our guest on today's show is Chris Johnson. Johnson is the former CEO of Landmark Health, a direct primary care provider that treats seniors in their homes. Optum bought Landmark in 2021, and Johnson left Landmark last November to start a new venture in pediatric care. I interviewed Johnson as part of our How Healthcare Revolutionaries Think series. I talked to him about why we should stop calling it chronic disease management and why we should start providing more preventative care in the home. Hello, Chris.
Hey, David. How are you?
Good, good. Well, it's very nice to meet you finally. I'm glad we were able to carve out some time. So appreciate you doing this for us. I'm just curious about where your interest in chronic disease came from. Was that kind of a personal experience? You, family member, just watching what was happening? Or was it sort of like a business epiphany where you're like, this is where I want to make my mark kind of a thing?
I'd say a fewfold. I think very quickly, if you think about how do you change U.S. healthcare and the way that it's delivered, I'd say more my North Star was I started to want to understand how do you deliver aligned financial incentives so that provider organizations would invest in better outcomes for the patients that they serve and really gear towards that. And
right.
As you start to kind of go down the path of understanding, you know, what needs to be true to have that be the case, mm-hmm. you quickly get led to like a really compelling place to start is chronic disease management. And
yeah.
And I don't really love the term chronic disease management, but I would say like helping patients who have mm-hmm. a higher burden of disease or frailty that they're living with and are utilizing healthcare right. services that we know could be avoided to drive better outcomes mm-hmm. for those patients and services that they don't want to have to use. They're kind of left to
right.
They're calling 911. Right. No one wants to have to call 911 if there is a better way to be able to be stable and remain at home in your community.
Right.
And the reason why you get to that point is you start to realize if you have kind of insurance risk on a patient population, you need to make sure that the interventions that you deliver will have a payback during the time that that person is part of your risk pool.
Right.
You start to kind of quickly see, hey, it would be amazing to be able to say like, let's try and, you know, build a business that prevents diabetes when someone is 36 years old. It's harder to build kind of the business model that supports that. There's at least in this the earlier innings of value-based care, you can start to have a really direct impact within 12 months on patient outcomes if you kind of start building models with folks who are clinical models with folks who are slightly sicker and currently actually experiencing these like very poor outcomes in the system.
Right. Now I want to go back to the chronic disease question just a little bit because you don't like the term chronic disease management, which I'm interpreting to mean you're almost like looking at it in three segments. That managing it's like in the middle, but to one side, you want to prevent it as much as possible, right? Because you don't want to be in the third bucket, which is you have to see a specialist or go to the emergency room, right? So it's not just you're in the middle, make sure you take your medicine, check your blood pressure, whatever, but you want to back that up a little bit and say, okay, let's get to why you have high blood pressure or why your blood sugar is high. Am I reading that correctly about why you kind of, that's not your favorite term?
I think that's maybe one perspective. The other reason, David, I don't love is like, I don't think that that's how people think about themselves. I don't think like individuals okay. say, hey, I have chronic diseases. And I don't think that they're saying like, right. I want right. chronic right. disease management. I think people are looking for care.
Right, right.
And I think too often we in healthcare like try and like hive off into these mm-hmm. like kind of categories like chronic disease management. And we get a little bit myopic right. saying like, I'm going to manage heart failure or I'm going to manage someone's COPD.
Yeah.
But I think if you take the human condition, like the consumer, the patient. Mm-hmm. What we're really trying to do, especially as you get older, is help people to live more meaningful lives, is have more happy days, have more healthy days.
Right.
And like when you start to frame that as the outcome, it just changes the way that you engage with consumers, and it changes the way that like a medical group can engage with consumers. And generally, like if someone is happy and they're saying they're feeling healthy and they're at home, that's usually much lower cost than if they're not happy, they're in a hospital. And
and so I
think that's where you hear, like, you probably felt more of like a allergic reaction to chronic disease. I don't think that people think of themselves as disease states. So thinking of the solution as being a disease state for me has always risked not actually driving to the outcomes that matter to patients, I think matter to physicians, and ultimately matter for like the...
Right. Yeah, you can't treat it like a business process, right? Like account, we're going to go to the tax guy or the accountant or whatever, right? It almost has that flavor to it. So you mentioned treatment in the home or being at home a lot. I'm assuming you saw some of that firsthand. So I'm curious about how did people behave at home, or how did that shape your thinking about social determinants? You know, to actually see that versus how maybe patients acted in the doctor's office or at the hospital. You know, when you saw that, did you say, okay, there's nothing edible in the refrigerator? In their home, they're more candid and will tell us everything versus, you know, people lie to their doctors. You know, how many drinks do you have a week? Oh, one or two, right? Did you stop? Yes, I stopped, you know, whatever it is. I mean, I'm just curious about how that shaped how you thought about how care is delivered, because it's clearly something that you're an advocate of, care in the home.
Yep.
So how did that work?
Yeah. You know, I think you hit on some of the tent poles there. Mm-hmm. I think I'd say first, the home is, it's like pretty intimate to invite a care provider into your home and to be having a conversation with your doctor at your dining room table, or in your living room at your couch. Mm-hmm. And that it's just a very different dynamic than, and I have to caveat all this. I've never worked in a hospital. And so like my reference points are more around here, but I think oftentimes people, they will get dressed up for their doctor's visit. It's a big outing for them.
Right.
Oftentimes they miss them because they have access challenges and stuff. But like to your point, you're getting a little, sometimes a bit of an artificial interface with folks. And then you're not seeing, especially for older, frailer folks, you're often not able to see many of the things that you identified. Are there trip hazards?
Right.
Does their spouse have an oxygen machine and there's cords all over the home that they're likely to trip over?
Right.
Is the food, is the refrigerator empty?
Right. Right.
Is it filled with high sodium, only high sodium foods in the pantry? Like all of those things are things that our team were able to see and take into account as they were kind of building a care plan with that individual. So it's kind of like a, yes, that was like one of the components, but it was also having people kind of in their comfort zone and then just democratizing that access. Like I said, I think for a lot of folks, they can't drive on their own. They need a family caregiver to come. The nuclear family, as which is probably obvious, is not as like nuclear in terms of like tight as it used to be. So sometimes it's hard for people to take a day off work to take a parent in to to drive 2 hours to do an appointment. So kind of overcame a lot of those barriers. I'd say that the challenge always is like where do the lines of healthcare, how far can healthcare go to combat bigger societal problems? And there's always been there's no clear line, but that's I think always been a challenge as a group, is like how can we provide scalable solutions that are equitable across like our entire patient panel versus, I think sometimes you hear like superhero stories about, you know, we got completely new housing or someone got all their ripped out and redone. I don't know to what degree healthcare organizations today are yet set up to do that at scale. I think it's great, the stories that exist there, but we've always struggled, but had to think through how far can our promise to patients go versus where is it like, we still need more resources to be able to combat some of these challenges to help people.
Yeah, good stuff.
I appreciate you spending some time with me.
Yeah, good to see you, Chris. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much. Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye. If you'd like to learn more about how Chris Johnson thinks, please read our Q&A with him on foresighthealth.com. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Burda for Foresight Health.